Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Freshly Booked on One Radio. Join us as we interview authors just beginning their literary journey. It doesn't matter how their book is published, the world agrees being a published author is a big step. We want to celebrate and spotlight these writers whose words were brought into the hands of readers. Listen in as they talk about their new experiences and join us in jubilation for those who are freshly booked.
Hello, everyone. This is Trish, and it's Freshly Booked on Sunday afternoon. We are with Les Becker, who is the author of The Waitress, The Whiskey, and The Handcuffs, which sounds incredibly interesting. And she's also, I'm going to grab the other one. I grabbed that one I remembered. The other one would have been easier to remember, and I would have, you know. But, yeah, right. That one I'm like, really? Yeah. I'm like, that is quite the title. I'm impressed. That made you wonder what's going on. And she's also the author of The Cruise. How are you doing, Les?
Very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I'm glad you are here. All right. So let's get right to the questions. And we, of course, don't want me to say anything more because I have a tendency to give things away.
Okay.
But first, tell me a bit about yourself.
My name's Les Becker. I live in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, which is northern Ontario. It's very, very cold here normally, and it's worse this year, as I'm sure the rest of North America would agree with. As far as writing goes, I guess I'm a bit of a late bloomer. It's my first published work, and I'm nearly 50. It took me a lot of nerve to finally self-publish. Let's see, what else? I don't travel much. I've been in the same district almost my entire life. I guess you'd call that a county in the States. I'm Canadian. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I drink a lot of beer. I think that's a law in Canada. You either have to drink a lot of beer or at least pretend to. But there's not really a lot to say about me. I write. that's
which is good. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that beer thing applies where I live, too. Since we live so dangerously close, I don't live in Wisconsin, but I live dangerously close, so it's kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of in the middle of all the beer area. So, yeah, small towns around here, you know, there's like 2 churches, 5 bars.
Okay.
Yeah, so, okay. Yeah, it's quite interesting. So, and I don't even drink, so it's like, this is great. Water for me.
Well, you can't live in Canada then, because if you say you don't drink, you're not even allowed to visit, I don't think.
It'll stop me at the border. Forget the passport. Yeah. You drink? Nope. Yeah, go back. Yeah, that probably wouldn't work for me, no. Okay, so tell us about your muse.
My muse? Oh, I hate my muse. Seriously, I hate my muse. I want to throttle my muse. Whatever it is that lives in my head and makes me crazy until I write stuff down, that thing should absolutely die because it never cooperates when I need help, and yet it will wake me up out of a sound sleep, make me haul myself out of bed to write something down, or it'll come up with the most astounding, perfect idea. And I'm in the freaking shower, you know, or I'm in the mall, in the bathroom stall, and I don't have a pen. You know, I hate my muse. I don't think I'm alone in that. Yeah. I think probably every single writer must have a real love-hate relationship with their muse. That's what I think of my muse.
Yeah, you wouldn't be the first. I've asked many people that question. They're like, hate. Yeah, we don't get along. The exact same thing that they inspire, like when you're in the worst possible position. And yeah,
exactly. It's like they, you know, your evil twin that hates you as much as you hate it. It's really, yeah, I hate my muse. Now I'm sure it will abandon me for years.
Yeah,
having
like,
said
and
that.
I'm out. You are not alone. Most definitely. So tell us about your main characters.
My main characters, well, there's Ruby Daniel is the main character of she's the waitress in The Waitress, The Whiskey, and The Handcuffs. She She just lost her husband, and she's running his chicken farm, which is definitely not enough to support her family. She's got two little kids. So she moves her mother in to help, and she gets a job in a really, really horrible place. It's an illegal bar or pub. It's like, it would be a speakeasy if it wasn't such a dump, you know, and it's actually nicknamed the dump for two reasons. One, it's a dump. It's a horrible little place. And it's also located down the road where this very small community municipal garbage dump is. So it's called the dump. And her boss is a police officer who is a very, very, very nasty man. And his name is Judd Gully, and I don't want to give too much away. He's just really nasty. She keeps trying to quit, but every time she tries, he gives her a raise. And he's one of the other characters is his best friend, who is a degenerate drunk named Wally McDonald. And all he ever does is drink and follow this police officer around. But my favorite character is probably a little guy named Wilson Jones. They call him the little drunk. And he keeps a room up above the bar area of the dump. And he drinks all the time, and he wets the bed every single night. And it's poor Ruby that has to try and deal with all of these people and the little drunk and the nasty cop. And those are my characters.
Now, did you base any of them on a real person?
Actually, all of them are based on real people. The story itself was inspired by the lady that I call Ruby. I used to rent an apartment from her. She's 89 years old now. The story would have taken place when she was about 35. It takes place in the 50s. And she's just such a wonderful friend. And she told me this story once when she worked in it wasn't a dump. I've changed that. It was a nice little sort of restaurant tavern kind of thing. And a real police officer in the area used to come in, and he used to actually pay for this room for the little drunk. He wanted to make sure that the fella had a place to sleep at night. And as a joke one day, he handcuffed Ruby to the little drunk for about 5 minutes. It was rather a disappointingly boring story, and I kind of took it and ran with it and livened it up a little bit. And my landlady she's not really my landlady anymore. I just still call her my little old landlady, and she's still kind of angry with me because I made up her mother in the story. I hadn't heard any stories about her before, and apparently I got her all wrong, of course, and she's still a little upset with me about what I did to her mother. So she has yet to forgive me for that one. But, yeah, they're all real people. I changed them around a lot.
Very interesting. Yeah, I think that's kind of funny that she's mad at you about her mother. It's like, well, if you would have told me about
her mother. Yeah, she was really – I got some great stories after that about her growing up. And her mom really was a wonderful lady, but the mom in the story is a lot more interesting.
Got it. Now, with a book title like that, how did you come up with it?
It started out as a working title. The story itself, it's not really a full like novel length. It's a short story. It's actually the first of three installments that will eventually probably be a fairly decent length novel. But it had three parts, which were titled The Waitress, and then the second part was The Whiskey, and the third part was The Handcuffs. It actually turned into five parts. But as a working title, I used that, and I just I got attached to it. I tend to shorten it to The Waitress in my own head or when I'm talking about it, though. And it should have dawned on me. Most people, when I say that title, they think I'm writing porn. That's usually when I see the look on their faces, I'm going, okay, it's not porn. I swear it's not porn. You know, so that's one of the things that makes it an interesting title, I think, is that the first thing people think of is, you know, is this a 50 Shades of Grey kind of thing? No, it's not. I swear it's not.
How are these handcuffs being used? Out of curiosity? Yeah, that I have to admit.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know if I immediately went to that or to the 50 Shades or to be BDSM, but I do know I went, huh,
yeah.
Okay, let's do
this.
I do
get a kick out of it, though, so I'm glad I kept it.
Yeah, it is probably the most interesting title I have ever heard of. That is,
oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
It
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
It literally makes you want to pick up the book and go, okay, I kind of have to know where this all
I have to know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I kind of got to know. What led you to choose the path you took to publishing?
Oh, I think that would have had to have been fear. Yeah, I have a really, really nice big collection of rejection slips from traditional publishers from when I was a lot younger, and that kind of turned me off doing anything with my stuff for years. I guess I'm kind of sensitive. I'm not very thick-skinned. I mean, I can still hear in my head some of these rejections, which were actually form letters. You know, everybody from that got a rejection from a certain publisher would have got the same ones, but I took them to heart. That, you know, they really kind of killed me a little bit, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'm completely over that yet. So I suppose it was a fear of rejection all over again, that I didn't want to go the traditional route, and self-publishing became so much easier. There's also the worry that, you know, if I did find an agent or a publisher that wanted to use my stuff, that, you know, if the story doesn't sell, it goes out of print so quickly. And when you self-publish, that's not an issue ever. I get to choose whether or not to take it out of print. And I think that's probably the reason that I went with the self-publishing route is, you know, I get to choose. So as a writer, I really like to be in control of my own creativity, and that includes the publishing aspect of it. So I think I went the right route for myself.
Okay. It definitely sounds like an absolutely best decision, especially those rejection letters, because yeah, I've had a few. I know.
It would have made me change that title, too.
Yeah.
Since you did go the route of self-publishing, do you have any interesting stories about it?
Huh. Well, the one that comes to mind is shortly after I published, I had a couple of people tell me that they had purchased The Waitress on iTunes. And I was kind of surprised, because I would have expected to get notification in an email that I had sold a couple of copies there, and I hadn't gotten any of those. So being me, I wanted to see that in black and white, and I trying to find out how to see my stats on iTunes. I'm Googling and Googling, trying to figure it out, and discover I can't sign in to see stats until I have my Apple ID. I didn't even remember getting an Apple ID, because I don't own any actual Apple products. But I knew I needed that ID to see the stats. And I figured, well, I must have an Apple ID, or how else did I get the stupid book up there to begin with, right? So I emailed Apple for help. And a couple of minutes after the email went through, my phone rings, and I pick it up. And there's this really nice guy from Apple. He's there to help. He assures me he'll get this figured out. He tries everything he can to find where my stats would be. Nothing. He can't find anything. He finally gives up. He gets somebody else on to help me out, and they figure it out. And it went through Smashwords, which is Smashwords is an aggregator. Like I send the book up there, and they send it out to a bunch of different places. Saves an author a ton of time. Except I didn't remember that, which really made me feel like an idiot. So I'd kept this guy on the phone for a half hour, and for nothing. And so I apologized. I said, I feel really stupid about this. I should have remembered that. I'm really sorry. He says, oh, no worries. We're here to help. Oh, and by the way, I read the description for The Waitress, and it sounds hilarious. So I went ahead and bought it. And
oh, that's cool.
It thrilled me. It was right near Christmas. It felt like the best Christmas gift I could have ever gotten. Every time I think about that, I smile. I hope he read it. I hope he liked it. I don't know that part, but I thought it was really, really cool that he would do that. So, but yeah, that's the only interesting story that comes to mind. But still thrills me to think of that.
That is pretty incredible. That is the way to sell your book. Hey, I'm having trouble. Hey, thanks for buying my book.
Yeah, I thought maybe I should have hung up and tried to get another guy on the phone and see if maybe I could sell a few more that way.
Keep going. That Yeah, they may have caught on if they were the same call center eventually. Hey, did you see? I just picked up this book. Yeah, I did too. Yeah, did she call all of us? But this was, that would be like the most clever sales.
Yeah, if I had done it on purpose, I'd have been patting myself on the back. It was a total accident. Yeah. But
well, since we were talking about it, what celebrity would you choose to play the main characters if you got to pick them for the movie rendition? If you got to do what E.L. James did, well, I don't think she got to pick who played Christian Grey and Anastasia Steele. But if she, you know, if you got that chance, who would you pick?
Oh, I have my main pick for Ruby. It has to be Amanda Peet. Definitely Amanda Peet. She's an actress. She was in Identity and Martian Boy with John Cusack. I'm a really big Cusack fan. And those films were, in particular, were my introduction to her. She's also done, she's done The Good Wife. She's been in a few other TV series as well. But it was Amanda Peet playing Ruby while I was writing her. She was the person in my head. And I think if there were ever a movie made of The Waitress and the lead was not Amanda Peet, oh, I'd cry. I would crawl under the covers and I would not come out for weeks. I'm not kidding. I mean, it has to be her for me. And yeah. I'm pretty sure that's why movie producers and directors don't want the writer anywhere near the set. They wouldn't want me on that set if it wasn't Amanda Peet playing her. So
very cool.
I don't know if Amanda Peet listens to this, but hi, I'm a big fan. You have to play Ruby.
So hopefully now she's going to some director going, okay, somebody needs to get this book. I have to play this part. That would be great.
Yes, somebody at least has to read it and let her fall in love with that part.
Exactly. Well, since we are talking about it, do you have an excerpt you would like to share with us?
I would love to.
Awesome.
You'd have to find it. You'd think that
this
I would. You'd think that I would have my little short story all memorized, but oh no. okay, so this would be beginning in the second part of the book when Ruby realizes that she's really broke, but she's still working at the dump. So Ruby still had her weekend job at the dump, partly because the farm was only large enough to generate enough eggs and poultry to sell in the immediate area, and partly because every time she tried to quit, Judd Gully would give her a raise. Every small stipend made it a little easier to decide that she could stick it out among the drunks, but it was never long before it came to where some idiot would do something to make her want to quit again. Most times, the idiot was Judd Gully himself. Take the whiskey games, for example. Judd kept a barrel of Swish in the back storeroom, along with the regular barrels of not-so-high-class whiskey he bought from a local bootlegger and cases of beer. Judd was nothing, if not cheap, and selling bootleg whiskey saved, or rather earned him a lot of money. The Swish was a watered-down version of the bootleg, and it wasn't sold to his customers. He kept that for himself. He started out drinking Swish on the nights he was on duty. He stopped into the dump two or three times a shift while driving up and down the highway in his police car to check the crowd, as he told Ruby, but it was really to suck a few back. He did that for a long while until one night there was a three-car pileup down the highway, and another district officer showed up at the crash site while Judd was working it. It didn't take the other officer long to figure out that Judd was working while tanked on moonshine whiskey. Ruby still hadn't the foggiest notion how he'd saved his job, but it was sometime after that night that the Swish barrel showed up. Now, whenever Judd came into the dump while on the clock, Wally McDonald in tow, Ruby served him Swish. Wally, not being an officer of the law, drank the high-octane version, and or beer, mostly and rode shotgun three sheets to the wind. No one, not even Wally, knew about that Swish barrel. Judd was a proud man, and most proud of the idea that he could drink any other man under the table, even if he had to cheat to do it. It wasn't long before he was drinking Swish on the nights that he didn't have to work as well, because he'd figured out a way to make even more money out of his clientele. The rules were simple. I'm sorry, I missed a line there. He invented a drinking game. The rules were simple. If you wanted in, you bought a shot, and you threw a dollar into the pot. You drank your shot. Then you bought another shot and threw another dollar into the pot. several more times. If you were still standing and you hadn't puked yet or run out of money, you bought another shot. Sometimes you played against Judd, and sometimes you played against Judd as well as everybody else in the dump. Judd was always the last man standing, so he always won the take. He made money hand over fist. Nobody got in the game without a dollar for the pot, and Judd didn't let anybody run a tab. Ruby figured that the only reason the idiots kept playing was that they were generally too drunk to realize that Judd was sober. Every night they played, they were certain that someone would topple the champ. And every night they played, Ruby spent the majority of her shift mopping up vomit while Judd crowed over his winnings. Wally never played the whiskey game, not having any money of his own, but sometimes the little drunk would throw a dollar or two in. Ruby couldn't decide if she preferred the little drunk playing the whiskey game or not. When he played, he went up to his room sooner and so got out from under her feet. But that meant that he lay in a wet straw tick longer. She couldn't change it with him in it, and it had got so that she couldn't quite get that room to let go the smell of stale urine anymore. A lot of the time, too, when the little drunk played the whiskey game, he passed out in the bar, which meant Ruby had to drag him up the stairs at the end of her shift. And it was on one of those nights that she finally hit her limit, again, and gave Judd Gully what for. This time she did it in front of his customers, and she regretted it almost instantly. It had looked at first as if it would be an easy Saturday night as far as Saturday nights at the dump went. There weren't many regulars there at all. It was close to 1 a.m., and Judd was off work that night, so he'd been in the bar since before it opened, swigging back swish and bemoaning the small crowd. All of them were drinking slow tonight. The thought of church in the morning kept them from carousing much. It didn't surprise Ruby at all when Judd stood up and called out, "How's about a game of whiskey, boys?" to the few that were present. Nor did it surprise her when they all jumped at the chance to see the champ whipped, finally. After all, Judd appeared to be more in his cups than the rest of them combined. Even the little drunk bought in. The game was going for an hour when the first man fell. Before he fell, though, he upchucked right on the table. His timing could not have been worse. Ruby had just set down a plate of hash and runny eggs in front of Wally, who wasn't altogether too tight as of yet, but the smell of his supper, coupled with the sound of the loser retching and followed by the sight of a half-digested meal landing next to Wally's own plate, was all it took for Wally to bring up what was left of his own lunch, all over the little drunk, who had quietly fallen asleep in the chair beside him. Ruby hit the roof. "Judd Gully, you have ticked me off for the last time," she hollered, but even as she yelled at him, she was starting to clean up the mess. Judd, along with every man in the bar, even Wally, having proven that the saying, "better out than in," must hold true, began to laugh riotously. Ruby slapped Wally with the dish rag. "You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Look at this mess. And if you think I'm going to put Wilson to bed in that condition, Judd, you have got yourself another think coming. I've had enough. I quit. I won't put up with this business one more minute." All Ruby wanted to do was stomp out the door, but for some reason that belied her own words, she continued to clean the table as she quit her job. "Now, Ruby," Judd laughed in a cajoling voice as he went behind the bar, "you know we're just playing." "Just playing my patoot," Ruby yelled back, beginning to mop the puke off the little drunk's shirt. "You get that drunk out of here," she pointed at the passed out loser of the game. "In fact, all of you, just get the hell out. This is the last time I clean up a mess like this. Go." She hadn't noticed Judd coming back from the behind the bar, handcuffs in hand, until it was too late. Before she knew it, Judd had placed one cuff around the skinny little wrist of the little drunk and the other one around one of Ruby's own. She was surprised into silence. Judd laughed long and hard, along with the rest of them. "Why, Ruby, you can't quit. How would I ever get along without you? Here's a little bonus for you," he said, as he swept the money pot from the center of the table and tucked the bills into Ruby's apron. "I'm going to take Reg home now. Let's go, boys. Let's just close up early and give Ruby a chance to cool off and clean up some. She's had herself a rough shift." And with that, Judd and Wally hiked Reg up off the floor and half-walked, half-dragged him out the door, the rest of the boys trailing behind, leaving Ruby stunned and handcuffed to the little drunk, who slept on in his chair, oblivious.
Very nice.
Thank you.
That is awesome. I love Ruby.
And
that is
basically the story goes on to how does she get out of the cuffs and how does she get Judd Gully back?
Aha.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So anyone who's listening, you really want to go get this book. Does that not sound like the most cool book you've ever heard? That is awesome.
Well, thank you very much. That's lovely
to
hear.
I'm sorry.
I didn't hear you.
I know. It's very hard some days. Let's get the important question out of the way. Where is your book being sold? We do know that Smashwords has it.
Yeah, Smashwords has it. And you can search either The Waitress, The Whiskey, or The Handcuffs, or Les Becker to find it. It's also on my own website, which is just lesbecker.com. I have a little link on the upper right-hand side that it says published. And when you click that, it'll give you every place that you can buy it. The only place that's really not up yet is Amazon. And that, again, is my own fault. I was a little slow as to how to get it up there, and I misunderstood a few things. So it's not there yet, but I'm hoping to get it up there soon. It's also on the Kobo site, iTunes, as I had mentioned. So there's a few places to get it, and it's a good deal. It's only 99 cents right now, so go buy my book.
Hey, you can't beat the deal, honest. Let's be honest. Okay, and I'm checking here. My computer is being very, very naughty. Okay, well, I've got one last question, and maybe last. We'll have to see, but I always like to know, because everybody kind of has a different opinion on this. How do you, when you write, do you just go for it, or do you carefully plot out what you do? Or for anybody, the typical term is, are you a pantser or a plotter?
Ah, well, I most certainly start out carefully plotting. A funny thing about writing, though, when you finally get into the groove, where that I call it the groove, where your people or your characters are starting to fully form, and they kind of go live, and then they take off, and they kind of mutiny sometimes. Like I'll be writing furiously, I'm trying to keep up, because it's a lot like watching a movie and trying to write down what you see that's going on. And, you know, you're busy doing that and everything's going great, and then all of a sudden somebody veers off book, or a total stranger of a character shows up, and it just changes everything. And it's like, who the hell are you and what are you doing? And, you know, I'm no longer running the show. And it's kind of wonderful when that happens, but it's also really, really awful, because, you know, I'm supposed to be God in my own little world, and half the time I don't even know where the story's going. I don't know where I'm ending up. So it gets to be very exciting and terrifying, because, you know, you give yourself a deadline and you know you're not going to make that deadline, because it's not going where you want it to. And so to answer that question, a lot of the time, you know, you start off with the best intentions and you have all your cards out and you know exactly what's going on. You've spent months outlining, and then it all just goes to hell. So that's the way it works for me.
Oh, yeah, and I've had many guests, including myself, who believe that they take over. They literally will take over the entire book, and you're like, no, that's not what I hate.
Exactly.
Is when they decide they're going to do that, and then you realize that this character just walked in that probably you actually need to talk about 4 pages back. And you're like, okay, why did you show up now?
Exactly. That's exactly what happens. New people show up, or you find out 2 characters are really one, or 1 character should be 2. It's terrifying, but at the same time, it's the most wonderful thing in the world when that happens, because it means you're on the right track.
Exactly. Totally. Well, thank you very, very much, Les, for being on today. We really appreciate it. It was I totally love your book. Totally, totally love your book.
Well, thank
that
you.
That is.
I appreciate that. Another 99 cents, right?
Yeah, I'm honestly going, I think I might have to go make a little stop over at Smashwords when I'm done and go pick it up, because that's just way too awesome to not purchase.
Well, that's really nice to hear. Thank you very much. It's a big compliment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see the whole scene going, and yeah, that was awesome. So I really appreciate you being on today. It was a great interview, and everybody get out to Smashwords and all the others and get this book. You're going to really, really want it. So I think we are pretty much out of time. Thank you again for being on, and to all of our listeners, we'll be back next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.